actually start? Okay. Okay, we're going to jump to number six, because we haven't got a form yet to vote. So I'll turn this over to Glenn. Welcome. That's pretty well to the point, isn't it? Welcome, I'm glad you made it to six.
Welcome, and here we go.
Okay, and we'll turn it over to Glenn.
Okay, basically, we're presenting the finished audit statement, and the results of that, and I will turn the time over to Mike Kidman, our partner at Jones Simpkins, as he is there, and give us the rundown, and then if we have any questions.
Do I have to stand up there? Can I sit right here and just talk to you?
No.
All the microphones don't work?
How about my don't work?
You don't listen to Curtis.
So I don't know if they're coming.
Can you hear me?
You can pull the microphone, Mike. You can pull the microphone out if you want. Just get
the mic. I kind of need to be able to see what I'm talking about. So I'll try and speak up, and hopefully that'll work. So appreciate the opportunity to come and just briefly go over this with you. We've already met with the audit committee and had a chance to go through this report in considerable detail. Have questions, so I'm happy to answer questions this evening. If you ask me hard questions, we'll ask Curtis. Other than that, I can tell you what happened on the audit. And the audit went very well. Curtis is always ready, and our staff is able to get through things and move through it in a timely manner, so we appreciate that. Let me just point you to where the audit opinions are, and just where a couple of the primary financial information is. But my understanding is you've already kind of gone through I'm not going to spend a lot of time going through that and answering your questions. So starting on page 2 is where the independent auditor's report is. And we're asked to render a report about whether these numbers are materially correct and presented in accordance with generally accepted accounting principles and state what auditing standards we follow. So we have followed the proper auditing standards, which includes government auditing standards. It also includes following uniform guidance, which is the regulations that govern the auditing federal funds. So all of that's covered in the audit report, and it tells us that these financial statements are materially correct, and it's the report is unmodified is the correct term now. So it takes us 3 pages to tell you that, but that's kind of how it goes now. So the next section on page 6, if you haven't read that, I recommend that you do. It's short, just a couple of pages. It's Curtis's, what we call management's MD&A, so management, Curtis, and starting at 5 actually. Curtis and Todd, they look at that, they put together that kind of a summary. There's some comparative information in there. That's where you kind of get the real short highlights of what happened this year to last year. So that's the section you really ought to read, just to give you an overview of comparison. The main statements are on page 9 and 10. That's where you get a look at your fund position, and then it transitions to a statement of net position. And what that means is at the fund level, we don't record assets and liabilities. And at the statement of net position level, we add in the assets and the liabilities that are related to the operations of the transit district. So the fund level is what we call a current resources focus. It tells us about our liquid assets and what we can do with those. It tells us about how much fund balance we have to carry over. And the statement of net position is the government's version of looking at a kind of a business-like approach so we can see the assets and the liabilities of the business. So you can see there that on a fund balance level, we have $6.8 million, and at the net position level, after we've added in all of the assets and stuff, we have $19.5 million in net assets. So that's what we have stewardship over and are looking to manage. Page 10 gives you the snapshot of how much revenue and expenses came in, and you can see that we have revenues over expenses at the fund balance level. We also have them at the net position level. What's different at the net position level is depreciation's added in, because we go through and deal with fixed assets and those kind of things. And then you've got all your notes explaining all of that, following after that. On page 25, it's another kind of important page. Because we have federal funds here, we have to audit those funds in accordance with what's called uniform guidance, which is the federal guidance that's published that outlines how different types of federal funds have to be audited and looked at. And so if you have more than $750,000 of federal funds, that's when that requirement is triggered. You can see you have $1.68 million worth of federal funds, and you're always going to have, I think, those kinds of federal funds. So you'll always have federal audit procedures that come into play looking at how the federal funds are managed and what kind of compliance requirements you have. We test all of that and have that published uniform guidance and compliance supplement information to guide us on that. And then with that information, when you go to page 27 and 28, and you start getting the other auditors' reports that come into play in these financial statements. So whenever you audit in accordance with government auditing standards, you have to do some additional procedures to look at controls and compliance at the financial statement level. And so we have done that. We have no findings, no weaknesses, significant weaknesses in the internal control system that we flagged and we can talk about. And then on page 29 and 30, you go through that same control and compliance process again, but that's focused directly on your federal funds. And so we look at those grants and what the requirements are for operating under federal operating grants. If you're using federal funds to buy your buses, we look at the grant requirements that are applicable to purchasing buses or federal funds. So in this report as well, we didn't have any findings related to the management of federal funds or compliance issues where funds are spent not in compliance with the federal grant requirements. So this is a very good, clean, kind of boring audit report. We just don't want to go back to talk about in terms of problems here. We have one more report that we have to issue. It's on page 36. In our state, the state auditor's office has a pretty robust state auditor's office, and they publish a state compliance manual. And so they go through and outline what they think are important compliance issues related to cities and counties and special districts and all of those kind of things. So we go through that book, identify the areas that are applicable, and just do those procedures. They change a little bit from year to year. That manual is influenced by whatever the hot topics are in the state related to compliance and things that the legislator people or the legislative auditors are interested in. And it's very detailed, but we just slug out those procedures as they're written. And we didn't have any major findings in regards to that. We did have one little minor finding that we put in the management letter, and there was a requirement in there that your board members go through a certain amount of training to get familiar with that. And we just looked at what was documented there, and we had a few people that needed to get caught up on that, and that's already good happening. So it's not really a big deal. That's one of those kind of things that sometimes I wonder, why we would take the auditor's time to look at those things, but if they put it in the manual, we test it. So minor thing that's already been dealt with. The management letter is not bound in, and we issue one that just kind of deals with a high-level communication to boards, audit committees. It tells us, gives us a space to talk about if there's new accounting policies, if there's new things going on in the statements. It gives us an opportunity to talk about if there's issues in the statements or issues that were worked through that were difficult issues in the auditing process. This is where we talk about those kind of things. We let you know that we do require management to sign a representation letter. We ask lots of questions. We make them sign in written form that they've shown us all the records, that they've answered our questions truthfully, that nothing's been withheld from us. And we do rely on that. And that's kind of what's in that letter. So, good, clean report. It's the one you're looking for. If someone wants a really exciting audit report, that means we have lots of issues to talk about. So, this is a good audit. Your numbers are very comparable to the prior year, so there's no real big hiccups in revenues collected or the volume of expenditures that it's taking to operate the transit district. You should be happy with this. It's all done timely. File. In good shape. So, questions about the process or the actual results?
This was presented to the audit committee, right, Mike?
It was.
And then who's our audit committee right now?
And Patrick. He's on there.
Patrick.
Yeah. Yeah, we go through the numbers in some detail. We're just make sure we are all understanding. We good?
Yep, thanks, Mike. Okay. So the audit committee did review this, and we feel really good about what's there in more detail than. And of course, you know, if we go through here and have any questions, then Curtis and Todd are happy to answer those questions.
Might be able to take a phone call as well.
Mike, so
willing to do that. So
if you come up with something as you're looking at it, don't hesitate to ask the questions.
The audit committee, you could ask the audit committee. They have a pretty good understanding.
Yeah.
Of what we've been through as well.
So review with us if there's something you're confused about or have questions.
Have concerns about.
I've got one other question.
Sure.
So the outside consultant that would use. Do you qualify for that as a CPA, and then that therefore you don't need that, or do you?
Yeah.
So you don't have anybody else that comes in and does that?
No, we have enough internal that we know exactly. We actually prepare these entire financial statements ourselves. The auditing firm doesn't help draft them. We prepare everything, all the financials, all the notes, disclosures, everything is prepared by us. And with my background as a CPA, I go through a checklist to make sure we've got everything.
Yeah. So that is a little unusual, just because a lot of our government clients don't have that expertise in-house. So we tie out the financial statements and go through our own checklist and procedures, but we don't actually draft these, which normally we draft financial statements.
So you basically just verify everything that they put together.
That's right. Yeah, Curtis pretty much hands us a completed draft. We go through it, go through all of our checklists. It's hard to do that perfectly. Usually we have to go through an exchange back and forth, whether it's a grammar or transpose number or something small, but the vast majority of it prepared in hands.
Any other questions?
Any questions?
Ready for a motion, Madam Chair?
Yes. Would someone like to make a motion to accept the audit as presented?
I would make that motion. Would we accept the audit as presented?
Second?
I'll second.
Okay. All those in favor? Oh, wait. Any questions? I think we've covered that. Okay. All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mike.
Thanks, Mike.
And thank you,
thank
Curtis.
You.
Okay. We have a quorum now, so I'm going, we need to excuse Cecilia Benson and Patrick Jansen, and Sean Bushman, Craig White, Wright, and Dean Coyle are at the Cache County Council meeting representing us, and they'll be here later, I hope. So anyway, Can we make a motion to accept the minutes and approve the agenda with a change in the agenda of moving item number 6 to the beginning?
So moved.
Second?
I'll second.
Any questions or changes? All those in favor?
Aye.
Again, opposed? Okay. All right. Do we have any questions or comments for management and board? For anyone? Well, then we'll move on to item number 7. Oh, wait. Next meeting is June 26th here. And I think that's it. And we'll move on to the general manager's report.
Okay, we don't have a lot to report for you tonight, but just to make you aware, we did just recently dispose of 3 paratransit buses because we got replacement buses in. And then we just this last week got 4 new large buses. And so we're in the process of going through and accepting those. And that takes some time. And then we'll be disposing of the buses that those are replacing in the future, potentially. We'll talk about that a little bit. And then just had some comments from some of you here before the meeting about you've seen the ads on Facebook, heard the ads on the radio. Roger had said he saw an ad on the TV. Our bus wrap, again, I think we showed this at the last board meeting, but we're having a bus wrap that's going to be promoting CBTD and that's getting done tomorrow, and so that's the bus we'll be using for parades and promotions and that type of thing. So just to make you aware of that, and then I'll just make this note because she's here. So Jenny, do you want to just stand up and wave? So this is one of our drivers, Jenny Hoyt, and she's come and talked to you before, but she just barely got back from the National Bus Rodeo. So she competed for the state of Utah. Because she won the state rodeo, competed back there and did a great job, represented the district, the state, herself, all of us very well. And so while she's here, just want to.
How was the barrel racing? Barrel racing.
Yeah, we'll give her a hand. That's a very heated competition that takes some of these drivers, you know, 4 or 5 times before they win that competition. And they're very serious about that. So she was up against some stiff competition, but she did very well. So that's really all I have as far as the general manager's report.
Okay. So we'll move on to item number 8 and the consideration of service modifications.
I'm going to run up there, if that's okay. Right. It's good enough for Mike. Can I just talk loud, or do I have to carry a microphone? I guess I better set the example.
Yes.
Okay, so.
It's part of the recording.
Yeah, that's right. I better.
Just don't start singing.
So, I want to preface this. I'm hoping that what we're talking about tonight really is a discussion. And so, I would just really encourage that. If you have questions or comments while we're going through this, then stop me. If you feel like you need to stop me, write it down. If you don't want to stop me, don't forget it. But really what we're hoping to do tonight is have discussion. And so we've got a presentation here that we put together, a great staff, and we've got some extra folks here, and it's great to see them here, to really kind of talk about really what we're seeing as kind of our vision and a response to what we've been hearing from the public. And so I'll kind of go into that, but this is really kind of a response to that. And so again, we'll kind of go through this. So to start off with, I want to talk about ridership a little bit because that's been a hot topic. We've heard a lot about that from various people. And so I want to kind of go through things. When we look at ridership, there's a lot of factors that can influence ridership. So, you know, fuel prices, unemployment, you know, the amount of service that we offer, how we design that service, and then, you know, what types of service. And so there's all these different factors, and there's others besides this, but what we're wanting to do with this presentation is really focus on the things that are within the district's control. fuel prices, unemployment, things like that, are not within the district's control. Curtis had told me about a typo, he's got his head down. I apologize for the apostrophe and the hits. I didn't correct that, I'm sorry. So we want to focus on that. If you look at, this is the percentage of service hours that we operate versus the population. And so over time, that number of hours that we operate to population is declining. And so when you look at that from an investment standpoint, essentially we're not investing as much as we used to, and so we think that that's part of why the ridership's dropping. We're just not having the same investment when it comes to transportation as we used to.
So,
yes, please.
You say we're not investing as much as we used to, or the population has grown faster than our resources are able to invest.
Yeah.
Which is it?
Yeah, it's probably a little bit of both, right? So we're not investing at the same level, or we haven't, and the population is growing, and we're not keeping pace with that as far as an investment perspective. Yeah. So it's kind of both of those things.
Okay.
Yeah. Great question. When we just as an example, when we look at private business in our valley, and I'm just going to use three quick examples, we see that the inverse is occurring. So I'm going to end with Walmart. I'll start with McDonald's. If you go to McDonald's, they have two drive-thrus. They have an app where I can order my food from my office, and then I can go pick it up, and it's already made, ready to go, and then they pick it up. So they're investing in making things convenient, and even more convenient. Maverick, we look at the investment that's occurred from Maverick's perspective in our valley, right? I mean, I just remember, like, the gas station in Richmond, right? I'm like, when's this thing going to shut down? I mean, this thing is depleted. And now all of a sudden, not only did that not happen, but the investment, those things are everywhere. In fact, if you look on Third South here in Logan, there's one on both sides of the road, right? And again, when I go into Maverick, I know what I'm going to get. I know the quality is all the same. So there's a huge investment. Walmart, for me, is the thing that really kind of flipped my head a little bit. So if I go shopping in Walmart, more often than not, there's more Walmart workers shopping than there are actual people. And those folks are shopping for other customers that are going to pick that their groceries up at the curb, you know, out in the parking lot. And they've ordered that, and then they go pick that up. So you look at that, the amount of dollars they're paying in payroll to shop for other people. And what does that come down to? All of that is based on convenience. And so when we look at this, what we're trying to talk to you tonight about is, how do we have community-driven transportation solutions? How do we engage our community in a way that the solutions are coming from our community? And by that I mean the direction, the vision, we're meeting the needs that the community is saying that they want. So just to give you perspective, when we're talking about the input that we've received, we're talking about the short-range transit plan, where we had over 3,000 comments submitted. You know, we've talked with mayors at various times. We've talked with business leaders. We've talked with folks at Utah State University. And we're working with Jeff Gilbert and the CMPO board at understanding what the long-range plans are for the Valley when it comes to transportation. And then how does CBTV fit within that? And so we've received a lot of input from these sources. And again, that's kind of where this presentation will go. So just to give you perspective, as we talk numbers later on in the presentation, we anticipate that there's going to be about $500,000 to $600,000 worth of revenue that you can use for new service or changes in service. And so some of that's coming from this additional tax that the county's passed, and some of that's from what we see as revenues that are currently outpacing operating expenses right now. So that's a number to just kind of remember. We can jot that down as we go through this. Any questions at this point? I really want to make sure to give you the opportunity to weigh in. So this is currently the board's overarching vision statement, if you will. And the thing I really want to focus on, and I would use this, but I'll probably use the wrong thing, so obviously. But up here, there's transportation options to region-wide destinations at a cost that demonstrates wise and efficient stewardship. So really the focus is that we're providing services to regionalized destinations. You know, and you have all these factors up here, and I think those factors are important, but that's really what it is, that we're hitting all the region-wide destinations. But what we've been hearing through this input process is that we want to increase connectivity and convenience for the communities, but we want it to grow the ridership numbers. We want it to grow the number of users. That's really what we've been hearing through this input process, is this is about growing the number of people that are using CBTD.
Okay, Todd, I'm going to say something.
Please.
E says environmentally responsible transportation options to region-wide destinations at a cost that demonstrates wise and efficient stewardship of resources. If you don't put those first two words in there, I think that it indicated that as a board, we felt that we wanted to provide transportation options region-wide, but we wanted to do it in a responsible way, that was not an overarching goal. It was part of the reach of the transit district itself.
Okay. So a big part of that is doing it in an environmentally responsible way.
Right.
Okay. Great. I appreciate that. Yeah.
Well, I have two thoughts on the vision. I wonder, the one thing that seems to be missing for me on the vision is that the transit district is a backstop. It's basically something that is there so that when the economy, for example, right now things are good and so forth, I think you're going to have a natural decline just because of the way things are right now. Even students coming in to go to the university, they've got some better transportation than some other folks have, you know, as they come in. So I think that there's that part of it, but I think the pendulum will eventually swing the other way. And the second thought is, when you say that the growth of members, users, is that the board that's giving you that feedback? Because I wonder if we're too focused on that, and we really ought to back up and say, the pendulum's gonna come back at some point in time, and the transit district needs to remain a strong backstop for when that pendulum comes back, and then you've got the services ready to go, and you will see a naturally, regardless of what the population is, you'll see a natural incline of services.
Great comment. I think that's a great comment. So yeah, I would say, even on the board, we've heard a lot about the ridership following, and there's concern there. But I think this is a great point, Lloyd, that what you're saying is, no, but is that really the end-all be-all? Or do we need to look at this other perspective that there's this backstop and we're okay with some natural fluctuations in ridership based on some of these other factors? So did I hear what you're saying?
Yeah, I think we've got to communicate that to those that are interested in the services that we do, such as the city, you know, the mayors and the county and so forth, so that they understand why we really are existing, and that we're not, you can't judge it by simply a simple decline that's happened over a period of time. And I think if you explain it correctly, they'll completely be on board.
Curtis had a point back here. I don't read lips well, so go ahead, Curtis. Hey, jump on in.
What we're encouraging is the board should have that type of discussion. As these recommendations are in, as we're discussing service modifications, these are the types of points that the board should discuss. Is it ridership? Is it backbone? Because that's what's going to drive the community decision. It's not us as management making that. It's the board, the governing body, making those decisions and sharing the vision.
And we just want to make sure that we're understanding. So I appreciate that comment so much. Thank you.
It isn't just our transit, though. It's a nationwide problem, is it not? And do we know what other transit authorities are doing to cope with this?
Yeah, so that's a great point, Roger, that this is a national trend, and I think to Lloyd's point, it's a national trend. When we see the economy take off, unemployment go down, nationally we see the ridership falls, right? But I will say, nationwide, the areas where transit's really still sustaining ridership, and where we're still seeing that, there's more investment in transit. Just like, you know, with private companies, the choice, if you really want to sustain that usership, is investment, making it more convenient. And so, you know, but yeah.
Good question.
Is usership a verb?
Yeah, it's my word. The number of users. We'll talk about why we're saying the number of users and not ridership a little later on. So, all right, so here's some opportunities we see. This is a multi-phased approach. Here's some opportunities we see for phase one. So the first thing is an investment in technology. Just like we're saying that the private business and I would say transit systems where their success is there's an investment in technology to make things more convenient. And so while right now we have the ability to show people on a map where the bus is in real time, that's what that is. They still kind of have to know the schedule. They still kind of have to know where it is they're trying to go to. And we're saying there, with some investment, we can have an app that will help them plot their route. It will show them exactly where to go within one app. And it also has a predictability to it that it will tell you when the next bus is coming to this stop. But you don't have to know other stops along the way. It's going to tell you at my stop, when's that next bus going to be there? And it's fairly accurate. And so it becomes really convenient for people because now all of a sudden, I don't really have to know the schedule. I just go to the bus stop and I pull up the thing and it tells me the route that's coming there and it tells me when it's going to come there. So it makes it really simple. We also believe that the same thing holds true for our ADA community, that an investment in the technology will allow us to not only schedule things more efficiently so that they don't have to wait as long for a trip or be on the bus as long, but also what it does is it gives us the ability that we can now pre-call them or pre-text them, let them choose which they want, but we can now remind them that the bus is coming. So a lot of times folks that are riding our paratransit services, they're dealing with disabilities, sometimes that's cognitive, sometimes that's physical, but they need extra time to get out there to catch the bus. And so by having this ability to pre-call them and say, hey, the bus is 5 minutes away, now they're getting ready to go, and it's a much better user experience from their perspective. And that's what we're talking about. How do we increase the overall user experience so that people have more desire to ride because it was a good experience? It wasn't so complicated or difficult to manage the system. It was actually easy. So now, hey, it's more convenient for me. Does that make sense? Okay. Along with that, this is something that the board already approved last fall, but to expand the call ride service area beyond the Americans with Disabilities Act requirements to serve the entire city boundaries. And we think that's a good thing, right? That's what a good thing was done.
So have you already put internet on the buses?
No.
Because that was the one thing you said was going to do wonders, and you didn't put it on there.
Because things change. This is what's hard about technology, I will say. You're right. I was a big proponent of putting Wi-Fi on the buses. But then they came back with unlimited data plans, and they're so affordable now that we don't hear that anymore. We did hear that several years ago. That was something we were hearing. And now we really don't get that request that much. I do think for longer trips, so if we connect to the Wasatch Front at some point, what I'm hearing from other agencies around the country is there's kind of a threshold, and once you get to this certain length of trip, then folks see an advantage of doing that because now I can truly work, and I don't have to use my data. But honestly, more and more people are doing unlimited data plans.
I would think Preston might be that threshold.
It could be. And
Wellsville might even.
Potentially. Yeah. I think it's a great comment. Great comment. Okay, so to increase the service hours for fixed route paratransit from Richmond to Hiram, to extend those hours. So we hear that a lot from folks. Currently, the bus ends at 5:45 at the transit center. And we hear from people, we're just outside the window for people that are getting off of work at 5:15 or 5:30 to use the system to get to the transit center and make that last run out. And so we think, based on this input that we've received from folks, that this makes some sense. But it's an opportunity. Also, allocate funds to a Bragg's Lifeline voucher program. So again, we've had Zach, who's here, and some others come and talk about this, but this is really that opportunity to have folks that are, these will be folks that are currently outside the district boundaries, more than likely, but still within the valley, for medical appointments, life-sustaining services, that they could have someone that's approved to drive them and Bragg reimburses that individual for some mileage. But you know, that's really all the cost is. It's pretty affordable. And so what we're saying, there's an opportunity here that at least for this first year, we would just fund Bragg's program, let them continue to run that, and we can look at long-term, does that make sense, or do we take that over, or how does that work? So an opportunity there. Also, community events. So these are things like Summerfest, the county fair, the pumpkin walk. You know, we believe there's opportunities to do other community events, and we've kind of talked with you about that before. And so again, there's an opportunity potentially there. Under this, we're proposing right now that we would say keep the existing routes as they are. They're operating, you know, fairly good within the thresholds, but there are definitely times of the day where they're not reliable because they're not going to make that transfer. But again, we're going to talk to you later about some of the things we're proposing that would deal with that to some degree. But right now we're saying the system's still not completely broken, so we would keep the existing routes as they are. So, recommendations. We're thinking for phase one, this is probably a 12-month implementation. Even if the board said, hey, let's do all of this, it's going to take us some time to gear up. So extending the county routes, the predictive app, this paratransit software we talked about, and continue to plan for facility needs as we're talking about some of these future expansions. Continue to do public outreach and marketing. So we're saying the annual operating cost for that is somewhere between $225,000 and $275,000 to do those things. Now, again, our objective in proposing this recommendation was to increase the number of users on the system. Right, and then also that we kind of pivot from being a human service agency to truly a mode choice agency, that this is truly a mode choice, and it's a starting of a shift. And again, this isn't mean that means we're not doing any human service. I mean, it's just more of we're focusing a little bit more now on making it more convenient and a little bit less on human service. But that's the thing, that may not be the right objective, to Lloyd's comments earlier. Maybe the way we had it was the right way. Because under this, if that was the objective, we're saying under that scenario, the Lifeline voucher and the community events, they may not generate a lot of usership. And so they might not generate a number of users. I got the peanut gallery back there. They support me a lot.
No pay raise.
I tell you, you know, expect me to read lips. I can barely see them. Anyways, but so these wouldn't generate a lot of users, but that's the discussion that we want to have. Do I think that there's a need here, a community need, from a human service standpoint? I do. And so that's where this discussion of what's that right approach?
So I'm interrupting again. You said you would leave the routes the same as they are. They aren't quite broken yet. What does that mean?
It means there are times of the day that they are.
What does that mean?
It means just like a highway system. If you go on the highway between 7 and 9, it's much busier than between 9 and 11, right? In Cache Valley, our bus system's the same thing.
But you can't possibly build the roads so that it equalizes out. It will never equalize.
Correct. And it's the same with the system. Our current hub and spoke system, so the buses go out and then they come back. They go out and come back to the same transit center. We are currently running the same schedules that we started with in 1992. Honestly, I don't know how we're doing that with all the growth and congestion. Quite honestly, the thing right now that's making that even somewhat possible is the fact that ridership is so low. Because when ridership was back at the highs back in 2011 and 12, the system was broken. I mean, we were just not maintaining schedule at all. But so to currently right now, there are certain runs, times of day, that we're not making that connection. So people are having to wait for the next connection. And that does affect people. I mean, they're like, that happens a couple times. well, if I have a different choice, I'm not going to use this. I'm going to do something else. For the folks that don't have any other choice, yeah, they're still there. They have no other choice. And so yeah, there's a balance there to me that ideally we'd love to revamp the whole thing, and we'll talk about that. We've got maybe a plan of how to do that a little bit later. But right now, without us doing the part we're going to talk about phase two, we don't think it's the right approach. So right now we say phase one, let's just keep it going as it is, knowing that we are negatively impacting people. We're openly acknowledging that we're having a negative impact.
But how does that achieve your objective of, I mean, it seems as though we go back to the same discussion that we always have, which is it people on the bus or is it availability, you know, expanding availability or whatever, however you want to call that. And so, but that gets down to who we want to be when we grow up, so to speak.
Yeah.
And so.
So who do we want to be, Jeannie, when we grow up?
Well, so I think you can, you know, you can do a lot of these things, and perhaps the predictive app is the great new thing to do. I don't know. But I wonder at what overall cost to our, we're a transportation company image, do all these side things bleed from? I don't know if that made any sense. But I don't know the answer, and it's sort of a choice that I think I see this group having to make at some point. Yeah. Probably now.
I agree.
I've made too many comments already, too. I wonder, I'd like to see us change our expectation of what we're trying to achieve in some ways, and this is just one person's perspective, so for what it's worth. This seems to all be surrounding an effort to, okay, how are we going to increase our ridership, you know, as we go forward? And I just think we need to take the pressure off of that a little bit, personally. That's just my opinion. And really focus on strengthening the backbone of the organization. And what I mean by that is it may be infrastructure, it may be personnel, it may be whatever, because I think that it's going to pivot and come back. And the demand is what will end up making the difference. Not, in fact, I'm going to be a little bit critical. I know we've done this really nice, what did it cost us, $200,000 to do this thing that we've done?
Public outreach?
But I don't know that it's going to make a lot of difference in terms of the number of riders, if we're really honest with ourselves. But what we ought to do is invest in the time, and I have to come from my own background and say, when I'm preparing for a communicable disease, what's important is that I have everything lined up so that, let's say I have a foodborne illness and it happens at a certain location, I've got the resources to move towards that, and I have to rob from other places in order to do that, but I'm always manipulating that system. I think the same thing can be applied to ridership. I think that that's going to come back, and you have to be prepared for that, and what should we be doing more to be prepared for that than worrying about how many people are on the bus today?
But he just got done saying that if we were at the ridership levels that were higher, the system is broken.
But I think what the deal is, I think what Lloyd's saying though is that the backbone is, do we have, and I'm going to draw upon my own experience, do we have the appropriate equipment to satisfy the needs in case the pendulum does swing? So if it does swing back, do we have the buses to match? Just what Todd said, when we were 2011, 2012, we were just flat out broken. So if we get back to those same levels, we're still broken. But we don't, what Lloyd's saying is, let's build the infrastructure. If that means you get more buses, you get more whatever you need, personnel, bus drivers, to do it, then you've got the backbone so that when the need arises, you shift to meet those services, to meet those needs. Like we're saying with this communicable disease. You know, it's just like what we do in my business. Once we have an incident where you have a spill, You don't go, well, let's see if we have the resources to go man this spill. No, we've got those set up around the country to go in and immediately attack where the spill is, when it is, and we have the resources to go in and clean it up.
But I will say, we're neither a communicable disease nor a spill. But I understand what you're trying to say. Go ahead, John.
Sorry. I'm guessing that Todd is wishing that he would have never uttered the word broken. Because that puts a dichotomy. Our ridership was up. Our percent of missing transfers was no higher than it is now, except every now and then something would happen, like a construction project.
So we have the capacity.
We have capacity. Now, granted, Route 1 and 4 are times in the morning and afternoon, we're standing remotely, but most of the routes, there were seats open. But we were growing, and they were getting full, and that projection is actually what initiated the goal for a tax increase. But it hadn't happened yet. And then all of a sudden, our ridership dropped. So we always have to pay attention to ridership to an extent, because if our efficiency is so low that we're paying $25 a rider, well, then that's a problem. But we don't have to make that our only priority, because coverage is equally important for my health. But a dichotomous broken fixed is dangerous. There are certain times of the day when there were challenges, certain routes that were challenges. But, sorry, Todd.
This is good. This is good.
I'm loving this. This is exactly what we want.
Yeah. So the routes, by and large, work quite well, and there's, our current ridership depends on it. So if they have the idea that we're going to start making changes all over the place, it's scary.
Well,
and so to say, make small changes as needed,
So do you think that there are areas where we are missing opportunity because of routes, or because of something else? I mean,
always,
you've been doing
routes,
all that.
Always missed. There's always missed opportunities in there. With their training, they're just trying to figure out and get the right balance. But it's hard, because you can say, wow, there's a need there, but then you start trying to get into the details and you realize that it's so complicated.
I really agree with that. When you show that first slide and you show the number of resources that were dwindling compared to the population increase, most service agencies can show that exact thing.
Why you gotta ruin my match? I'm so good about myself.
Hey, you've made
I'm joking
today.
I'm joking.
No, because I have a slide just like that.
That's the better one.
So, but I do think that there is this. I think our perspective of how we attack the problem maybe just needs to change just a little bit, because I think we're putting an undue expectation on the staff by simply looking at the bottom line numbers. I'm not sure that that's the...
I think over the summer, a big impact is that all the construction going on. I ride the bus every day, and I see a lot of people get confused, and they don't know which bus to take, and consequently they miss the bus because they don't know.
Great point. I mean, that's...
What's the mayor's... What do they say when you talk with them?
What do you guys... I can tell you what are your guys' conversations with the mayor? Ridership's a big concern that I hear about a lot.
Yes. That's why I think we can't just look at one or the other, and that's where it becomes a balancing act for all of us, because we have a lot of our elected officials or people in the community who say, look, that bus is empty. Every time that bus goes by, there is no one on that bus.
That's right.
Why are we doing that? So we have to pay attention a little bit to ridership, but at the same time, we are a service organization, and we really do want to target people. The whole reason we have it is for people to be able to get around. We want to be that, heartbeat of the community, helping people that way. So it is a balancing act for all of us to look and say, it's not one or the other, it's the balance of which way do we need to tip. And maybe right now we need to tip this direction, and a few years from now we might have to tip back the other direction, but that's why we have to be vigilant and watching what's happening and seeing what's happening with our trends.
Well, I think ridership though has been such a negative for us, because it's why are you doing this? Because if the ridership's down, they look at it as a key indicator that why should you be spending money or why should you be doing this? And so it's had a negative impact on some of the things that we do, because we all of a sudden now we become sensitive to it. so we start focusing on ridership. And but I like what Lloyd's saying is that maybe we need to start sitting back and looking at it a little bit more globally and seeing when this pendulum shifts, if it does, which I think it will, where do we sit? You know, I like Sean's history lesson, you know, that we were doing well. You know, yes, we did this, yes, we did, okay, that's great. But if the pendulum shifts and it shifts further, can we support the population? Because your graph that you showed at the beginning shows we're going downhill, not uphill.
So I want to say one more thing. Well, probably not one more, but for now. I keep thinking that, you know, we've talked about this, and we've talked about different opportunities, and we've talked about what we might be able to do. But I keep wondering what our communities would think if all of a sudden the transit district was gone. What would they lose? And if we can figure out what it is that they would lose, then I think it would help me anyway know how to move forward better. But I feel like, you know, they talk about empty buses, or they talk about we'd rather have them on this street than that street, and, you know, we're going to do this, and, you know, whatever, or they don't come to the place I want them to come. But what would happen if it just disappeared? That's a real negative thought, but it might come to what that core value is that we provide to the community that we can build on as our backbone.
And Madam Chair, for you conducting out the addresses to you, may I speak?
You may, Roger.
All right. I just think if you move things along, you'll get us out of here a little quicker. I'm just going to say that we got an indication of that stuff 3 or so years ago when we had a public hearing when we talked about, you know, should we charge a fare? Because many elected officials said charge a fare. It's only fare to the others, right, that they are, right, are to the public. And so we had a room filled to capacity right across the hall, and we had parents with young children, we had people with children with disabilities or older adults with disabilities. How many were there at that
public? I was there.
You know, I mean, that was an eye-opening experience. We did not have one elected official other than Jeannie at that meeting, which I think is very unfortunate. And that gets to what Lloyd is talking about. You know, what's the right balance between, you know, serving lots of riders, which is kind of easy to achieve. We could circle the university for all day with several buses and get a lot of ridership, but we're leaving out a lot of those other harder to serve that are important to serve individuals. I would suggest once we, you know, feel comfortable as a board with whatever balance we're talking about and how we want to proceed, that we send a letter to all of the mayors that we serve, maybe all the mayors, the county officials, describing the balance or the difference between maximizing ridership and serving those most in need. So, and also add Lloyd's comment, you know, in an economic downturn, many people rely more on the service. We ought to outline that in writing and have every one of us sign it. You know, so they think about that a little bit more than maybe they do right now. Well,
Roger, one of the backbone pieces that I'm thinking about is just as important as actually making a difference here. When we see the negative kind of aspect of about ridership being down, if we had really well-crafted speaking points that address that exact issue, we would be far ahead than simply just saying, okay, how can we end? I think we're always in the defensive, and maybe we ought to really maybe have a chance to promote with really well done speaking points.
And Jeannie's comment, sorry to add on without you calling on me.
I'll let you add on.
Well, all right, thank you. All right. You know, 130,000 people about in Cache County right now. We don't serve them all, but as the population increases, this service is going to become increasingly vital. That kind of answers your question, Jeannie. What would happen if it's gone? well, if it's gone now, it's not going to be quite as serious as it would be in 10 years from now.
Well, even if it's gone.
Tens of thousands more people, so.
Even if it's gone now, you have greater congestion.
I agree. It's really important that it's planning for the future is an important part of it as well.
Yeah.
And air quality is an important part. And Lloyd, I disagree a little bit with, we'll see how much the advertising and public relations and marketing helps. It might take us a year or two, but look what the health department does related to air quality and disease control and that sort of thing. You must think it
helps. We call it education. We don't call it advertising.
You spend time and effort and money on it, so you must think it helps a little bit.
That's a different.
Yeah, it's what my mayor got in my face about being new was, what is the transit district doing now? My community's growing by leaps and bounds. What is going to happen in the future? That's what he wants to know. That's what the city council wants to know. What's going to happen for our planning and what we're doing? They need to know that.
And Greg, what does he want?
He's talked to Todd. The mayors have all talked. Is there any other faces here?
Yeah. Okay, we can move to those. This is, I don't want to shortchange the discussion because I think it's fantastic.
I think what he really wants is, with everything going on in the valley, as it affects the city of Nibley, what is the transit district going to do to go along with the changes occurring in our community?
So let's talk about some of these additional phases. I'm gonna change it a little bit based on, I'm hearing a lot that ridership's not as big a concern to this group as I thought maybe. That's good. And if I misunderstand that, then correct me, but.
Well, I like what Lloyd said, though, is we need to go on the offensive rather
sure.
than the defensive.
I agree.
Education.
Okay, so I still think what we're wanting to propose to you, I'm going to cast it a little bit differently than it was because I think it's a critical piece. So, phase two, here's some opportunities. And we believe this is a key opportunity to, and I would say we were talking about trying to generate usership, but I think this is a key opportunity to deal with growth. This is a key opportunity to deal with how we meet a growing demand if the ridership comes back. So I think this is a difference. And this is pivoting. This is pivoting from where we've been. So we've been a hub and spoke system. Everything comes through the heartbeat, the transit center, everything. The problem is our communities are sprawling. They're growing out. We can't get out as far as the community is anymore and get back. The only way we can do that is to reduce service. So how do we do that? Well, we start pulling stops out so it's not as convenient. Or we start reducing the headway. Instead of going every 30 minutes, we go to 45 minutes. Or maybe we go to 60 minutes. Because it's taking that long to get that far out in the community. So this is what we're calling a boomerang route, right? So a couple things, it's different than what we're currently doing. So this is what we call a connector route. So this would run from Walmart to Walmart. I'm just trying to keep it simple. You know, I'm not trying to promote Walmart, but that's where a lot of our riders ride, right? So what we're trying to do is we're saying, look, there's this urban center now in Providence in the south end of the valley, Nibley. There's this urban center that's mirrored to this urban center up here in the north. But we have this thing called the university that's the largest employer, largest destination for our riders that are a part of this. And then we have this urban core, Logan downtown. How do we connect all of those? And so the staff did a fantastic job. I mean, this is like this hard project. Guys make it happen, right? They come up with this. The other thing about this is it's bi-directional, meaning that we have buses running opposite directions. So if I want to go here, and I'm heading this way, I catch the bus on this side of the street. But if I want to go this way, I catch it on the opposite side of the street. Because there's buses going each direction. Ideally, it would be about every 10 minutes. So I don't have to really know a schedule anymore. I don't really have to wait because it's so convenient. Now, it doesn't have to be 10 minutes all the time. It's scalable. We can just add more buses, it's running the same route, and now all of a sudden it's 10 minutes. We want to pull that back because it's not as a busy time of the day. We pull the buses off, now it's every 20 minutes. So it becomes scalable. But the other thing this does, 60% of our major destinations, people don't transfer. They get on one bus and it takes them to where they're going. That's huge for people. That's huge. Now, this is why it's important that we're using increasing number of users. Our ridership will go down. Because the way that we count ridership is, again, the national standard. The national standard is every time somebody adds another leg on that trip, that's a new ride, right? So when people come into the transit center and then transfer onto another bus, we count that as a trip. That's how we're supposed to count it. That's how they count it nationally. This would reduce that significantly, because now we have 60% of our trips that they don't have to make a transfer. But we still might increase users. We still might increase our impact on the community. But what this does is this now extends our reach. So now, if I'm trying to hit something in North Logan, rather than run a bus to the transit center, I only have to run them to a point on this route. So now I can run a smaller vehicle. We don't have to have a larger vehicle. We can run a smaller vehicle, run out into the neighborhood, run that route, cover some areas, so we're providing coverage, and then connect onto this route, this frequent. So now I have multiple transfer connection opportunities. It's not just the transit center. So this allows us to deal with this growth that we're saying that's making us unreliable at times. So while I think it does help us to generate usership, I think it can help us from a standpoint of dealing with the growth if it comes, if the pendulum swings. Okay? Questions about that?
So it goes back and forth from Walmart to Walmart, and then is it a separate one that does Main Street to the university?
No, that's all one route. That's
so
how we
get
all those
destinations. So it starts like at North Logan Walmart, goes up to the university, and then goes to South Walmart, and then back up to the university.
And another one's going the other way. So ideally at peak time, you would have up to 8 buses, you know, but you might only have 6.
I used to get, when I was mayor, I got calls. It was never about, I mean, you'd get a few people who would say things, but it was more the individual situation. And I would call you and say, hey, can you help me with so-and-so? and so I would get help that way as a mayor, but I didn't get a lot of feedback in terms of people kind of knew the little square that you were doing and they understood how to go catch it and that kind of thing. That really wasn't a problem. I don't know if that's helpful. I don't know if that's true on the south end, but I do know that was the case on the north end.
Well, the challenge is the transit center, our reach just doesn't go as far as it used to 20 years ago. Our ability to get out in the community just doesn't go as far. And so either we have to add more buses and put them on now what we would call, some are on express routes and some are on regular fixed routes. So they're still running a similar route, but they're only hitting every other stop or they're only hitting 5 stops. It adds some complexity to it that can be difficult. But again, there's ways to deal with that. But we can't go as far as we used to go. We're just running into that problem more and more as congestion increases. So. Yeah, please.
So would that be getting rid of like the transit center and everyone, or what did you call it, Spokane kind of thing, where the buses are going out and then coming back in every half hour? If you did this, would you just have like several buses on that loop and then other buses bring them to that?
Two different points along this route, right?
Okay.
So if I'm coming from Millville, I don't have to go all the way into the transit center. Okay. I can connect down here at a point that gets me onto that route and would get me to all of that other stuff.
Okay, so it's replacing the system basically.
Kind of changing it, growing it, maturing it.
With this one can tell more now. And would the buses, the routes that are now involved, say like for Nibley, would they connect up with this? So it will allow them to make one connection. Then they can run up and down, then they can action the back.
So part of what we're seeing is, again, this growth, these sectors of growth, right? This southern sector has almost all the services that you have up here in the north. So for folks that live in the north, I'm one of those folks, I live in Smithfield. I don't go past the transit center unless there's something that's down there that I've got to go to. I just don't want to go deal with all that traffic and congestion. And I can find most everything I need up here in the north. And it's the same for the folks that live on the south end of the valley. So let's embrace that. So if I'm coming from Millville or Nibley, And I don't need to go up here. They don't. They just come here. They're able to catch that bus. It's a direct connection. They don't have to transfer. They do their shopping or whatever it is they're doing, and then they get back on their bus and they go back to their neighborhood. So we develop these little neighborhood connectors that connect to this backbone, I think.
I like this idea.
I do too.
So like, for example, Todd, you could actually take, and at the north end where the square is at the top, you can basically have a bus go from there to Richmond and actually service Richmond faster doing that and bringing people to that top end of the boomerang, and then they're every 10 minutes. And therefore, I don't have to come all the way into the transit center. I can come to that top end, pick up the bus, and go.
Or you may be coming into the university picking up the bus and going.
Yeah.
Because it may make sense that particular segment of the population is really coming here and the route's designed to come here. And so it comes to the university and back out. But yeah, so also we have all these multiple points that we can connect to. It extends our reach. Because the valley's grown. The valley's extended. The population is sprawling. And so land use planning really affects how we develop.
It's almost like the fair, every 10 minutes. I can depend on that. If I get to a feeder location, I can get to north or south.
Yeah.
I like that.
Yeah.
So what happens to the transit center?
Yeah.
It's still a key part. So this bus is going to go through the transit center, but it's not going to stay there. So it'll come, drop off, pick up, and then take off again. And we're still going to have routes connecting to the transit center. The transit center doesn't go away, but it's just one transfer point now, like other transfer points. And again, if you think long term, we probably would want to make maybe some of these transfer points a little bit nicer. Not that it's just a bus stop on the side of the road, but maybe we have a small interior waiting for people that are going to have to wait for the bus.
Isn't this more like how Salt Lake does it?
Kind of. I mean, that's what I say. When you get into this, you start looking in. I'm getting ahead of them. Yeah, similar. So you identify corridors.
Are we hurt financially by defining our ridership in this fashion as opposed to the standard ridership? I mean, is there an implication that I'm not seeing here?
Man, you guys are awesome tonight. Let's bottle this for all future meetings.
We are awesome.
Can I just say that? That's fantastic. So those are some of the things that we're going to have to look into. If the board says, hey, we like the direction that you're headed, then we're going to need to look into that. So what Lloyd's asking, we're going to get hurt. Remember, stick funding. Some of that's based on ridership, and our ridership's going to go down. But some of that's also based on the amount of miles that the riders ride, and that might go up. So there's all these factors. There's six stick factors, and sometimes they compete against each other. And so my answer is to you, I don't know at this point, because we haven't put that level of detail into it, because we want to see if this is the direction the board wants to go. So. Yeah, possibly. We might actually end up financially better.
There's a positive thing. Down south, they're doing a lot of, like the Riverwoods and whatnot, they're adding more commercial buildings and whatnot. So I think there'll be more need to along Main Street and whatnot.
So we really are trying to identify the future growth,
yeah.
Economically, residentially. Right, so I mean, again, we're trying to understand the land use patterns of cities. Where is high density going? So,
well, I can tell you, Logan, you're going to have that development's a hotel, an extended stay hotel, half a mile down the road on the other side, where LS Equipment is going to be a big office building and retail. And so, before you get to that Walmart, you've got a lot going on. You've got all the hotels are on Main Street.
Again, this is so they don't have to transfer, right? That's
right. It gets them to. The only thing I worry about is that we're sort of featuring Walmart, but that's okay. Because there's Smith's in between.
Yeah, we can come up with another thing. It's just so.
Yeah, there's
Macy's
right south.
Yeah.
Pretty much across the street.
I don't from Kmart parking lot.
And again, that may be so.
I'm just teasing.
No, I understand. So let's talk about that though. So this is kind of a longer term thing, right? If we have to buy extra buses to put on there, it's going to take some time to buy those buses. We would reallocate Route 1 and 4 we would reallocate that service into this route, right? Because that's where a lot of that service is anyway. We think you need to still engage the public. So here's the fun thing. It's only going to cost us, you know, $1.2 to $1.5 million. How much do we have first to play with?
$500,000.
Yeah, so what are we going to do? You know, I mean, that's the challenge, is how do we afford these things? And so again, what we're saying is this may, if the board says, hey, we want to really go after this, put the research in, it might require service modifications. It might require reductions. We might even eliminate service in some areas that there's just not a lot of ridership. I don't know how to get us there another way right now. That's what we can come up with, but we're open to other ideas.
Is that an annual, that's annual operating?
Yeah.
And how much would be saved? Is that total or is that
increase?
So we're saying after the routes we've identified right now that we could reallocate, it still is going to be this number.
Okay.
But there might be some other routes.
Buses every 10 minutes, right?
Yeah. Well, again, it's going to be based on your investment, right? So let's think about that. Think about this. Heidi, you're a user, so you help me here. If the bus is coming every 20 minutes, that's awesome, right? Is it better if it's every 10 minutes?
Well, I think it depends on the route. I ride from Smithfield most of the time. But then I, a lot of times, go from the transit center up to the university.
Yeah. But think about that. If what's the difference between 20 minutes and 10 minutes? 20 minutes, kind of got to know a schedule, kind of got 10 minutes. Do I really have to know the schedule?
Does 20 minutes save us the 1.2 million?
This isn't everything in 20 minutes.
Okay. Just wondering.
And so, yes, again, remember, this is scalable, right? So we can knock it back to this every 60 minutes. But again, I think we have to understand, are we okay that that's what it is? Because it's not going to be as big a bang. But maybe we're okay with that. Maybe we're really not needing to do that. So I think there's opportunities to have discussion around that.
Do we need to choose between phase one and phase two then because of the cost?
We need to have discussions.
Okay. Yeah. Well, I'm just saying, because like, I know what you're saying, we have like 600,000.
We're not asking you to make a decision tonight.
Well, oh, no, I'm just saying, but like, over the next few months.
Is there a phase five?
Yeah. These are really the most two exciting phases because they're most close immediate phases, right? Phase three is more of just longer range because we think what we do today affects where we go tomorrow, right? So once we point the bus, that's where we're committed to. If you change that commitment, we can change with you, but it just changes the investment, right? So phase three, continue to monitor demand for expanding of hours. And I didn't really go into that. I really want to highlight that real quick, if I can. So this is scalable. One of the things that we hear frequently is later evening service. You know, we hear that. But when you look at the penciling it out, every time we pencil out, right, Sean? It just is like horrible. Well, that's because we're trying to do some level of the whole system. All of a sudden, if this is 60% of our destinations, if we run two buses on this, you know, until 10 o'clock or 10:30.
Midnight,
whatever we need to do, all of a sudden that becomes much more affordable because we're not trying to do the whole system. So does that make sense? This really is a key spot to where we're saying to transition for the future. But again, that's our thoughts. Is that yours? Okay, so phase three. Work to develop signal preemption, because we see that down the road that's going to be something that we need to do. Signal preemption meaning that there's a little computer on the bus and computer in the signal lights that if the bus is running behind schedule, it keeps it green type of thing, helps the bus maintain a schedule. Redesign areas of service to reduce transfers and increase connectivity. Again, this is more of what we were talking about of having these little neighborhood connectors that connect to the backbone service. Consider services, van pools, general public call a ride, connection to the Wasatch Front, those types of things. And then beyond 5 years, this is again where we're working with Jeff Gilbert, MPO, identifying these transit corridors like Floyd's talking about, and really we talked about this in brief to the city managers, and we've talked with a couple mayors already, but identifying these corridors and then committing to those from a transit district's perspective, but also from a city's perspective. Committing to those in writing so that, and saying, look, we're gonna zone our land use to a more higher density, to economic development, so that the developers will come in. Because why do trains generate so much development? Because they're fixed. They know once they make that investment, they can't move it. That's really hard for buses because we can move it on them. And so we've got to look at how do we commit to these corridors long term so that the developers can say, I know you're going to stay there. I'm willing to now put some investment in there. Your land use supports that, right? So I know the land use supports this density, so I'm going to invest there. So that's what we're talking about with that. More express routes, again, limited stops, quicker from these denser areas, more options without transfers. Find cities that are interested in more transit-oriented development, where we have, you know, job centers, you know, livable housing there, all that around the transit-oriented development. And then continue to do that public outreach, so. What are the questions? It's been so good.
Wonderful discussion, I agree. But do you need an indication from this group of support, like for the boomerang idea with various options, 10 minutes, 20 minutes, 30 minutes, and you price them all out? Do you want an indication of support, whether we want you to proceed with that or, you know, I heard people say they would like you to proceed with that, so.
I like your idea if you can make it cost neutral. And you're the administrator,
hey,
so it's
there. You're the magic man. What other magic sauce you got for me?
Is this Mactor route going north and south? Is that Main Street?
But I mean, again, Roger, I think we're also looking at, like, for example, the Lifeline vouchers or the community events. I mean, is that still an important piece? I mean, because that's not generating, you know, increased users. It's necessarily, it's not going to stack the numbers, you know.
It's your service organization.
It's more of that.
Are there phases of a boomerang thing that are, would be the highest demand that you could phase in first initially? Did you see what I'm saying?
Hours of the day or?
Well, you may not be able to, I know you've probably thought through all the connections and so forth that you guys want to have come in and hit different parts of it, but are there some that you know are going to get higher traffic right off in that, and you don't have to implement all of it at the same time? You can start to test it a little bit.
The thing that's hard is that route on itself really needs to run the entire route to be successful. I mean,
yeah.
And so you say, yeah, we're only going to run it to the transit center and then be done. Well, that's what we're doing. I mean, that's route 1 and 4, and we're doing that type of thing. So it's really hard to.
But the connecting ones.
Yeah.
You're saying that those can. The only way that this whole, the center part of it will work is if it's fluid from everywhere, if you couldn't just take pieces of it and try it.
I mean, we can go back and look at that. I'm open to looking at that.
This gives us the opportunity to have the positive talking points about a lot of things. We're addressing so many positive things. Seems to me that it's a good idea.
The only other thing I would say is, at what point does the board feel like we need to share any of this with the public, with elected officials, with business leaders, or do we not? How do we do that? I mean, those types of things too.
I'd like us to kind of go forward and give a positive inclination tonight so that we go to our cities in the next few weeks. Share with them, like, for example, Hiram would be tickled pink to know that there's an idea of another later route, because as you said, we lose a lot of people and take the bus with that. So if we could share with them ideas going forward that we're mulling on, even though they're in a complete state, I think that's a good thing.
I think that's great. I do think we need some of those numbers. You know, talking about 1.2, 1.5, what's gonna give to make that happen? Because it might be tickled pink until they find out that it means this is going down.
or that may not have an impact.
So some of those points I think need to be fleshed out a little bit more and with some dollar tags on them. So we know, you know, obviously it'd be really cool if people just go shop and say, here, Tom, give me this. But, you know, it's not that easy. I think it's going to flesh that out. I think that would work.
But are we giving you enough direction? I don't hear much direction.
Clear direction.
Pursue all of these things to come back with numbers? Is that the direction? Or?
Well, I think that personally, the Main Street University sort of loop makes a lot of sense for the growth at the university, the growth in the community. But I think that we need to understand, I guess I would like to understand better how much it would cost to just implement that part of it, and then how much it would cost to implement the satellite pieces that would bring people to either end, so to speak. Because that, to me, it has to be that whole, you know, that might be part you can scale. I don't know whether you can implement this.
So the boomerang route, if you will, to come back with numbers of this is what it would look like at 10 minutes, 20 minutes, 30 minutes, 50 minutes, that we can do pretty good. To start doing these satellite pieces, mm-hmm. that's going to take some time. I just want to make you aware, because we're talking about how do we take the existing routes, do they go away, do we modify them, and so that type of impact is going to take quite a bit of time.
Right, and so I wonder if, you know, I mean, I don't know whether you said 1.2 to 1.5 is just the boomerang route without any of the satellite stuff.
Correct, yeah. It's incorporating some of the existing service to the university that we would put into there, and then it's just the boomerang route. It's not the satellite. That's what we had put in phase three of more of developing that in phase three of reallocating all of those things. Because that takes a lot of time to really go and look at all of those other destinations and how we meet those. And so, yeah, that was phase three.
So it probably would be valuable for us to know if that number is a 10-minute number or a 60-minute number.
Okay. So phases of the boomerang route is what you're saying.
Right.
Okay. We could,
that would be my thought.
Does somebody have something back there in the green paper?
Your mic's on the top part.
All right.
I take it, Todd, what you're looking for from us probably is we need to make a motion to move this forward to make it official rather than just say, yeah, let's, why don't we do this?
Well, if there's specific things you want us to look at, by all means, give us that direction. So like Jeannie just said, give us different frequencies on the boomerang route. Great, that's great direction for us. Is that what the board feels? I mean, so if you can give us some specific direction, we'll take it. I mean,
Roger brought up some things. It's too bad he's gone, but I think I'll make a motion. The one thing that I would like to see is the speaking points be developed that we could all be really articulate about how,
yeah,
why we're looking at this as a direction, and why we're not as worried about being defensive of the numbers right now, so that when we talk to others and the public and so forth, we have A, B, and C, and not more than five things that
right.
we can immediately hit.
I would like that to take to our councils and kind of an overview,
yeah,
of half dozen bullet points.
And maybe this should be in a separate motion, but the second part would be to vet the boomerang system out, like you suggested. I would like to know the specific costs of that, if we possibly can get to that.
And where
we're
going to get the money from.
Yeah,
so
suggestions
what
of how do we raise the money.
And what the startup be? If we've got to have eight buses or so running.
Yeah, we can give you the time frame. We can tell you the number of buses you need.
I would second that.
What you're gaining is you're reaching out to more people, but you're sacrificing convenience. Is that a fair way to say it? You're kind of reaching out, but
well,
you may not.
Ways it's more
may not be
maybe not.
Jody wants to.
No. Well, maybe I didn't say that very well. But you're going to have to maybe decrease the amount of time, in other words, no, increase the amount of time per stop, but you'll be getting out to other areas that would come in and connect in.
That could be one option of it, yeah.
Anything else?
It's been moved and seconded.
Moved and seconded.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Okay.
Thank you for the discussion.
That was really good.
Really appreciate that. I think that's very helpful for us.
Okay. We'll move on to board chair report. I don't have anything other than I'm going to give Ron 5 minutes, Ron. All you got.
I will take my full 5 minutes.
All right, no, good timing.
The PEP committee is going to move forward with the first of many monitoring issues, but the PEP committee is going to do it themselves and run it through. We're going to do the ends policy. So by July, we'll have a report for you. If we don't meet in July, you'll get it in August. But we have a path forward. We have a way we're going to be looking at it, and we've got a forum set up where we can evaluate the appropriate documentation and everything. And so we're just going to see how we're going to make it work, and then we're going to invite all of you to participate if you choose. So we look forward to dealing with all of you, and we'll train you as to what you need to do. It's a very simple, I think it's a very simple way of doing it. So we'll be doing that. But we are starting in June with the ends policy.
Okay.
That took less than 5.
You're good. Okay. All right. Any other questions, comments?
Were we going to hear from those who went to the county?
Sure.
Yeah, do you want to?
Sure. It's a pretty brief discussion. As you guys know, most of these types of meetings, there's a resolution to alter the allocation of funds that would take CVTD's funding from 40% of the quarter set that was passed down to 10%, and the resolution did pass as expected. There was very little discussion. Dean and Sean both kind enough to get up and represent us, and our message basically was keep in mind CVTD is here to partner with you to be part of the conversation about transit, and we will use whatever funding that comes our way intelligently.
How much is that, the 10%?
So did they address that?
Josh Minar, county planner, gave a quick rundown on the resolution, and you know, he went through that, and essentially and you guys would correct me if we got this wrong, but essentially drops CVTD's cut from about 1.5 million down to just under 400,000 or anything. So yeah, it's going to be tough to hit the 1.2 million target with 270,000.
You don't have that 400,000 built into this budget at this point in time, right?
No, that was part of the 500,000 to 600,000 we put at the front. That was part of that. When we say you have about $600,000, that's anticipating about $400,000 from that new tax.
So you anticipate you're only going to save. So, never mind. My brain is working a different way.
Okay, anything else?
So, did you get any sense why? I didn't understand. I assumed that they didn't pass anything in the state legislature and it was a done deal, that it was going to stay the same allocation. And then all of a sudden, this came up. So I don't understand where the genesis of that came from.
I think it came from the county not wanting CBTD to get 40%, they got 20.
But I don't know how come they can just pass a resolution and have that happen.
They had to get state code changed. Jack Draxler's office to get state code changed.
They did get it changed?
And got it changed to where it wasn't a what would you call it, a general population vote. It wasn't required to make that change in the allocation. So.
And they sweetened the pot by giving 55% to the cities.
Well, the 40%, or excuse me, the 30% difference from CVTD's cut will split 50-50 between cities and county. So cities will get 55% and county would get
35%.
Yeah, 35%.
Logan City's the big winner.
Yeah. Yep.
Yeah, I know. I just
don't like it.
I don't like that. I don't like that stuff.
Yeah, but it is what it is. It's the county we live in. So.
Yes, it is.
Anything else? Well, thank you for your coming and for all the input. It's been a good night. Do I need a motion to adjourn, Jim?
No, you can just say we're done.
We're done.